Blog Talk Radio.
TV aristocrat pulling rabbits from his hat. Oh well, I didn't know it worked like that. Sounds great until you do the math. And now people waking up, poking heads out of their stuff. What an expensive turtle shell. It's probably just as well, because I don't want to be the machine powered by the American dream.
Here on the Legacy Forum. Welcome. This is Robin and Harry Shivery. You have no idea how many times I call into Skype, which is what I have to do to bring this show to you. Just connected right when Amy finished. I guess it's come to every week just trying to give our best, just doing our part to make this world a better place. We bring you nuggets of information, a little bit of yoga information, a little bit of self-improvement, network marketing, and usually an interesting special guest, with tonight being no exception. You call us dialing 347-677-0699. You find us on the internet as well by going to blogtalk.com and place Legacy Forum into the search window. We are on our Legacy Tour, our RV trip around this beautiful country, and tonight we're still coming to you from Fort Collins, Colorado. Our daughter's in college here at CSU, Graham, and we have found some of the friendliest people in the country here in Collins, Colorado. It's amazing. We understand they graduate with a master's degree at CSU and just are happy we're at Taco Bell just to stay here in this town. Can't say that I blame them. We start our show each and every week with the segment that requires hours upon hours of rest and contemplation. So get ready. Here is this week's Things to Know and our one.
Thank you, baby. I really appreciate it. This week is no exception to the major hurdles that my wife has to overcome. She was disconnected twice, maybe three times. She got back on and brought me to you. So for this week's Things to know this. 7 in 10 minimum wage are millennials. And according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, 260,000 college graduates are now working minimum wage jobs. Know this. The CBO and the Joint Committee on Taxation said the law's insurance coverage provisions, better known as Obamacare, will now cost about $1.4 trillion over the next 10 years, about $104 billion less than previously estimated. This year alone, the government will spend $5 billion less than projected. Know this. There are four ways, and only four ways, in which we have contact with the world. We are evaluated and classified by these four contacts: what we do, how we look, what we say, and how we say it. Know this. It's hard to say the right thing at the right time, but it is far more difficult to leave unsaid the wrong thing at the tempting moment. Know this, real hourly earnings for retail workers has actually decreased since 2007. Well, I hope I've earned my rent for this week. And this week's guest, I guess I'm going to go on and talk about this week's guest, friend of ours. And, you know, Robin and I have been very, very lucky in people we've met throughout the years, and this week is no different. This week's guest is a gentleman named David Ponsler. David is an artist blacksmith. His artwork can be seen throughout the United States. He's one of the few master craftsmen practicing blacksmith art. He began practicing, well, in the 70s, I believe. I don't want to say how old he is, but he began practicing in the 70s, and he has spent his life dedicated to his art. David, are you there? David, are you there?
Can you hear me? I am here.
Beautiful. We can hear you. We can hear you loud and clear. How is the weather in Florida? How is the weather in Florida tonight?
It's a little bit gray and probably in the 60s right now, so it's cooler than usual.
That's interesting. Well, it's beautiful, almost perfect weather in Colorado. So, David, you are coming to us from Florida. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, as you mentioned, I have spent my lifetime doing metalwork. I was raised in a family business that my father started in 1950. And literally was sweeping the floor and at 6 years old and started welding at 8. And frankly, I've never looked back. There's nothing that ever tempted me away from it. I I think I was probably destined to do this. And I'm still just as fascinated, if not more today, with the craft and what more there is to learn and do than I ever was.
Wow. Let me ask you, what is blacksmith art? Can you describe to us what that is?
Well, generally, when I talk about my architectural wrought iron work, that typically falls into two different categories. One is considered fabrication, and that's a person that typically cuts and welds different things together. Whereas when you start talking about blacksmithing, it's more of manipulation of metal. And for instance, most everything that I do requires the heating and reshaping of metal prior to its fabrication. And I do what's considered a blend of forging and fabrication, forging being the heating and hammering of hot metal.
So when you're talking about forging, what is forging? I mean, what exactly is forging metal?
Forging would be to take metal and heat it to its proper temperature for forging and then hammering it. So you would be changing the cross-section and shape of the material by hammering hot metal.
So there in Florida, where the temperature is not known to be cold, you take metal that is very hot and you hammer it to make it into a particular shape or form that you desire?
Yeah, it sounds crazy. It seems to always be that it's August where I'm my busiest.
Well, that's amazing to me. Now, when you say artwork, are you just talking sculptors? You mentioned, housing or architecture. What do you actually do? Where can people find your work? I mean, what do you actually make?
Well, it varies. When you're talking architectural metalwork, that was the career that my father started back in 1950, and that's really what I've done throughout my life. The other side of me, which I've done consistently throughout my entire career, is sculptural work. And the sculpture that I do is what would be considered abstract. It's not some people think it's figurative work, but it's not really a depiction of anything that's that identifiable. So it's more, the sculptural work is more fluid and expressive and, things like that. Whereas when I do architectural work, it's what I like to say I design for is a blend of things that are appropriate for the architecture that it's on, like, say, the house, the style of the house. But it also, I like to put in aspects of the personality of the client that will be living in that house. So it's a lot more defined. Now, what's really nice about my career as a sculptor, an artist, a fine artist, is that often an artist has to have a second career to be able to afford their art, especially in this economy. It's art is quite a luxury, so it's kind of difficult to be just an artist. So often people have a separate job. Many teach art in schools or have just any variety of another job to help support their art, which in my case, the architectural ironwork served that purpose. Now, fortunately for me, they go hand in hand because as I learned my skills in one thing, they perfectly matched what I needed and the other. And truly, my foreign art, when people ask me to describe it, I often say that it's based on my long working relationship with metal and that I am really exploiting and using all the skills that I've ever learned throughout my career and apply them to my fine art.
So when you say your fine art and your sculpting and things of that nature, what's the longest period of time it's taking you to complete a piece of artwork?
I probably did that last year, and I worked on one piece for 3 months. And that's interesting. It's an interesting question because I have a real kind of a disconnect between my art and my architecture, and it's part of what makes me want to do the art too. And by saying that, often projects that I do architecturally, say for a really large, fine home, I might actually work on that project for more than a year, and it takes a lot of planning, a lot of coordination, a lot of communication, and exactly fitting physically into the fabric of the home or whatever I'm applying it to. Whereas with a sculpture, I have the freedom to just express myself and do what I want to do and allow serendipity and creativity to, you know, creep in and just really make the piece. So it's satisfying in that I really get to let go and do really exactly what I want to do without the parameters of the architectural work.
Well, you just recently did a project there in Jacksonville, Florida, at a local establishment that, you know, most people, when they would think what you just did would be anybody could do, but I saw a picture of it, and I'm not in Florida, but I saw a picture of it, and it just fascinated me. Can you tell us more about that project? Because ordinary item and made it a piece of artwork.
Yes, that's a project I'm still working on. I'm starting to do phase 3 and 4. But phase 1 is for a restaurant that's right down the street from my shop, and it's a really nice place. It's called Kickbacks, and in fact, it's a new restaurant that they're adding on right next door. Its name is actually Guzzle Pipe and Gutty Works. And what I did was created a spiral staircase, which is more in the architectural line. And basically, it's going to take patrons up and down from the first and second level. Phase 3, actually, is I'm doing the second staircase that's going down to a full basement. So it's very functional, but yet I was really allowed to do whatever I wanted to as far as design-wise. So it bridges a little bit of both, because technically I had to meet code to make it safe, to make it strong and sturdy, and there was extremely fine parameters that it had to fit into. But artistically, I was given a total free rein to come up with how I wanted it to look as a final piece.
Well, I can't wait to get back there to walk it. That's, you know, supposedly just a functional item, a staircase, and made it a very, very fine piece of art. And I just admire people that can take their work and take it a step above, because, you know, to be honest with you, I'm just an average guy. Somebody says, hey, let's go look at a staircase, I'd look at them like, you're nuts. But that staircase is phenomenal. So that being said, I'm proud of that, and I've seen other work you've done. What's the piece, artwork-wise, or even architectural structurally, what is the piece that you're most proud of?
Well, I have to say, I kind of divide my life in two parts. I started with my family business when I was younger, but I have some favorites from that time period. About 15 years ago, I, tired of being on the road all the time, and decided I wanted to work by myself. So I changed careers, so to speak, or just changed the path. Right now, I think the favorite piece that I have done in the second half of my career is an archway, which is pictured on your screen here, for Stockton Park, which is in a nice neighborhood of Jacksonville. And one reason why I like it so much is that it's one of the more public pieces that I've ever done. Most of the architectural work that I have completed in the past are always in private residences and are rarely seen by the general public.
Well, I can tell you that, you know, it's, you know, our show is called The Legacy Forum, and there's a reason for that, and it's part of our jest, or part of the reason for this, is to encourage people to create a legacy. And you have done that, and I'm quite proud to call you our friend. But even more importantly, I'm proud that you are a friend who has created art all over this country that people can look at and they can, you know, if they appreciate it, they can, you know, sit there and look at it for a long period of time to, you know, to elevate their lives. If someone wanted to get in this business, because, you know, to be honest with you, like I said, we're just average folk, and if someone would say, hey, I'm going to be a blacksmith, I wouldn't know what they're talking about. How would you encourage someone who, say, a young male or female that saw a piece of your artwork and said, hey, I want to do that. I want to take, you know, Ponsler's example, and I want to create art like he's done. What would you advise him to do?
Well, that's a good question, and it's the best answer to that simply is to get a job for someone like myself or like my brother's shop or anybody else that is doing work that you admire. Because the problem is it is really a very expensive craft to start just because of the amount of equipment and things that you really have to do to get it. But often people start very simply. As far as a blacksmith is concerned, you really only have to have an anvil, something to hammer metal onto, a hammer, and some way of heating that steel. And you can simply start in that way. Now, when you get into larger projects, it takes a lot longer. So I would say two things. Start very simple, but probably a better idea is work for a very well-equipped shop and learn a lot while you're there.
Well, how many, to be honest with you, is your craft easily, if somebody in, say, Bozeman, Montana, or some, you know, how hard is it to find a good quality craftsman like yourself? Because, you know, you don't want to brag, but I'll tell you, you're one of the finest artists I know, and your work, because of the type of material you work with, will far outlast your life, and it will last for, you know, centuries. I mean, it's phenomenal what you do. So say somebody in Bozeman wants to learn this, where do they go?
When I first started blacksmithing, there was a huge void of knowledge at the time, and this is back in the 70s. There were a couple of very pivotal books and one very pivotal university that really kind of snatched blacksmithing out of total decline and gave it a revival. These days, it's really not difficult to find a good metal worker and a good blacksmith. They are pretty much spread out all over the country. When I had to learn, I really had one book that showed me what it was, and I was operating in a total void. And I remember several of my father's friends coming from different parts of the country just stopping in to visit, and they would show me something. And that was like a gold nugget handed me because I was literally drawing from nothing. And I had an assistant here with me when I first started for 4 years, and he had a great opportunity to learn from me, and then he went on and learned from a few other master blacksmiths. So it was really quite a gift for him to be learning at this time versus when I did. So I think it's a lot easier today to learn what I have learned because, you know, you could learn in my shop working with me in a year what it took me 10 or 15 years when I first started.
Wow. So, and you have exhibitions of your artwork. Do you have any going on right now?
Yeah, currently there is an exhibition that has 8 pieces of my forged bronze sculpture at the Cultural Center in Ponte Vedra Beach. That's here in Florida.
How long will it be on display, or will they be on display?
It will be all this month and into the first week of May. I said that hesitantly.
Well,
I should know the ending date, but I really don't.
So
I know
if
there will be a time where I have to go take it down. But.
So if someone sees the display, can they purchase the artwork that they see on display?
They certainly can, and I highly encourage it.
And so do we. So, you know, because what you do is so phenomenal to me, and, you know, the brilliance of your craft, because, you know, it's one thing to sit and paint a painting, but you actually have, yours is a physical endeavor We've seen you work. We've seen videos of you work. And I, correct me if I'm wrong, they can find you on YouTube, can they not?
Yes, I do have one video on YouTube. So if you type in my name, David Ponsler, into YouTube, it should come up with a video of me forging sculpture.
I mean, to me, it's incredible what you do in the hot summer days of Florida. You're out there sweating, pouring your literal sweat out to make artwork that we all can enjoy, and at the same time, you do it, and it's artwork that can go in people's homes like a staircase, a railing, or whatever. So I don't know all the questions to ask you. So what have I failed to ask you that's really, really important that you want people to know about your craft and about you personally?
Well, usually when somebody asks me about the craft of blacksmithing, one of the things that comes to mind most often is really the fellowships of blacksmiths. I think the fact that it is such a very hard craft to learn, that typically worldwide, if I had a question about something I didn't know and I knew somebody who was dealing with that, I would merely have to ask, and they would so freely give me that information. And I've had other artists in different media, painters and such, who have marveled at how sharing we are, because in some cases secrets are held, and that used to be in the blacksmithing community. You know, centuries ago there were guilds and secrets and whatnot, but I really don't feel like there are any secrets anymore, and I really owe that to the difficulty of learning the craft. And, you know, I have learned a lot of what I have learned by making mistakes, and those mistakes are often costly, time-consuming mistakes. So, you know, if anybody asks me anything, I'm right in there with them. I will just tell them anything that I know that might help a fellow smith.
Well, don't you need an apprentice at some time? Because it seems to me what you do is so physically taxing, I don't know how long you can do that. I mean, any person. Now, watching you, you know, I mean, you have almost superhuman endurance out there, but it seems to me that a frail person, it would be very hard for them to do your craft.
Yes, it would be, but I recently made a piece that was really quite small, but very, very intricate, and as I was working on it, I realized that, yes, I'm getting older, but this is something that I can fall back on. I did take a break from having an employee and from some of the paperwork and trials of that, but I can foresee that coming back as I get older and do need help. I did have my former assistant come in for a couple of days during this last production run I did on the restaurant, and there were just a thing that one man could really struggle and have difficulty doing, and I did one by myself, but I thought, oh, this would be so much easier if he held that piece for me while I hammered it the way I was. I just got off the phone with a smith that I really don't know very well. He's down in Ocala, and he had moved to here from Missouri not that long ago, and I told him about the project, and I said, you know, I really needed all the money that I got from this project to pay a certain bill that I had to pay at a certain time. So I really couldn't have afforded, you know, to hire somebody to help me do this right at this time. And he goes, I would have come and done it for free. And he was serious, and I know he was. And I said, likewise, brother, I would do the same for you. So there's that kind of friendship and camaraderie amongst us.
Well, I think it's, you know, among artists like yourself, I think that, you know, society, we never pay you or for your pieces of artwork what they're well deserved, but in, you know, your compensation is actually more in a form of a legacy, because, you know, long after you're gone, your artwork remains, and that's something I really, really admire. So if someone needs to get a hold of you, or they really want to buy some of your artwork, or they want to learn more about you, how best do they get a hold of you?
The best way would be first to email, and my email address is my first initial and last name, D. Ponsler, Ponsler, @ME.com. So Secondly, if they don't, I can give you my phone number as well. I have no problem with that. It's area code 904-629-9986.
Well, David, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule and enlightening us, because we have seen your artwork, and I want the world to see your artwork. You know, and maybe at some point in time, you know, Robert and I will win the lottery, and we can have you build a staircase in a home that's worthy of such a piece of art. So, David, thank you for your time this evening, and next time we're in Florida, when we return home, we'll look you up and see what you're up to.
I can't wait to see you again. You too, take care, and thank you.
Thank you so much. Well, for those viewers and listeners out there,
little old man never read a book, never learned to read or write. Worked all day just to earn his pay, waiting for his dream tonight. But this old man sitting next to me, dreaming of things to be, ain't he a little like you and me? Working since the age of six, it's told, coming from a family of ten. Working through the years till he's so old, people say he's older than sin. But this old man found a way, happier than some may say, living life as it's meant to be. And you know it's only happiness that we all should try to find. But nothing can serve itself, let alone the watermelon rind. For you know it's only happiness that makes this life worthwhile. And could I beg it for the chance to walk with me a
for playing that. That was Christy Saul and Little Old Man, and welcome back to the forum. We want to again thank David Thompson for being our guest this evening. His art is just tremendous. I encourage any of you that are listening that would be interested in blacksmith art, you need to look him up on YouTube. Now on, the U.S. stock market is rigged in favor of high-speed electronic trading firms, which use their advantages to extract billions from investors. Now, this is according to Michael Lewis, author of a new book on the topic, Flash Boys, A Wall Street Revolt. High-frequency trading, HFT, is a practice carried out by many banks and some trading firms using sophisticated computer programs, you know, to send a ton of orders into the market, executing a small portion of them when opportunities arise to capitalize on price imbalances. Now, HFT makes up more than half of all U.S. trading volume. The trading methods and technology that makes HFT possible are all legal, but Lewis said these firms are using their speed advantage to profit at the expense of all other market participants. They are able to identify their desire to buy shares, let's say in Microsoft, and buy them in front of you and then sell them back to you at a higher price. Proponents of HFT argue that the presence of such firms makes it easier for all market participants to find buyers and sell them for their trades, and that the speed of which HFT firms can detect advantage of pricing imbalances. Now, this is supposed to be good for us. However, earlier this month, New York State's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman said he believes U.S. stock exchanges and other platforms provide HFT firms with an unfair advantage. And more information coming out of Wall Street. Stocks could be setting up for a 10% to 20% correction, and the odds are good it will happen soon. And that's according to Sam Stovall, Chief Equity Strategist at S&P Capital IQ. Stovall is expecting as well as a lot of other voices on Wall Street, about a 10 to 20% correction this year. He says it's likely to begin during the second quarter based on historical market patterns, because we've gone 30 months without a decline of 10% or more, and the average is 18 months. It's just a matter of time. Stovall says corrections are likely to occur during midterm election years when the declines have averaged 19% in the S&P 500. He also expects the year to end positively and points to the average 10% returns in years after gains of 20% or more in the S&P 500. Even if there's a steep market decline, Stovall said the S&P typically recovers quickly. We could see a 10% decline, but I remind people the best three quarters immediately follow the worst two. That's what we have from Wall Street. Tonight, we will not have much of yoga wisdom because, for whatever reason, the Skype gods have declared that Robin is disconnected once again. So let me tell you what my lovely wife did this week. My lovely wife took her Open Road Yoga. If you haven't seen it on Facebook, go to Open Road Yoga with Robin. And it's tremendous what she's done. Follow her as she teaches people the skill, the art, the craft, or whatever, physical exercise, whatever you want to call it, of yoga. This week she taught the CSU Yoga Club restorative yoga, which I find great value in. So check her out on Facebook, Open Road Yoga with Robin, and see how she's bettering the world. Speaking of bettering the world, let's move on to self-development. You know, body language is one of the most important parts of communication. It can constitute 50% or more of our messages, and oftentimes it reveals a truer sense of our words and meanings. Verbal content in a speech accounts for only 7% of communications. Voice tone is responsible for 37%. Body language, believe it or not, body language has a 56% effect. Kate, well, use your body to say what you mean. The ability to read between people's words is a skill that will serve you well the rest of your life. Even when you're silent, your body is sending signals about your mood and inner thoughts. Your eyes, hand movements, posture, breathing patterns, looking up or down, even the tilt of your head are dead giveaways for the underlying message. You know, in a game of poker, they call it tells. Poker tells. The very best poker players are skilled in their abilities to read people and interpret body language. An open posture, for an example, in which you sit with your arms relaxed, your legs slightly apart, and your body tilted a little forward toward your conversation partner, gives the message that you respect this person and you want to offer your full attention. Adopt this position and you will communicate that you're open to influence and you're available for interaction. You know, on the other hand, crossing of the arms seems to be a worldwide body language of defensiveness. When people cross their arms during a conversation, it can indicate that they have, you know, withdrawn from communicating and they're locked into a position or they're locked into not hearing you. Well, you can't always assume that someone's body language indicates exactly what he or she is thinking. You can use it as a signal to pay attention to your own communication. When you are engaged in a conversation with someone, cross their arms, do a mental checklist. Are you communicating in ways that are causing the person to shut down or feel defensive? Now, be honest with yourself and do what you can to get the person to relax and open up. Communication doesn't take place unless both people are open. Body language expert Robert Brenner offers the following advice. When extending your hand to shake hands, keep your palm facing upward because this suggests honesty and sincerity. Keep your hands where they can be seen. I mean, like shoving your hands into your pockets makes you look secretive and suggest hidden agendas. Into one hand against the other conveys confidence. And those are just some finer points of the art of communication. Always remember, your words are only a portion of the message you are conveying. If your words are not congruent with your nonverbal message, your words may not have the same validity. They may even be doubted. And that's our self-development portion. Speaking of self-development, let me go right into it. Are we going to have any music? If we're not going to, oh, well, let's find some music. Let's see where Robin can find some music. Let's put her on task here, because she can't really hear what I'm saying, but now that I said music, let's see if she can find some. Because the business depends upon you. You know, and there's tremendous misinformation about network marketing that is hurting millions of Americans. Our country is going through a tremendous economic shift, and the vast majority of people are continuing the path of economic stagnation. And we want to help educate people seeking to increase their cash flow. First, let me explain what network marketing is not. Network marketing isn't an illegal pyramid scheme. Illegal pyramids are programs similar to, you know, chain letters, where people just invest money based upon the expectation other people will invest as well and that money will somehow make its way to them. Illegal pyramids promise unjust riches. An illegal pyramid is strictly a money game and has no basis in real commerce. Normally, there's no product involved at all, just money changing hands. Modern-day illegal pyramids may have a product, thinly disguised, but really their business is about money changing hands. It is a legitimate business. It is not an illegal pyramid. First, it's based on providing people with real, legitimate products they need and want at a fair price. While some people do make a lot of money through network marketing, their financial benefit is always the result of their own talents and efforts in building an organization that sells real products and real services. Network marketing is a truer reflection of the capitalism this great country was founded upon, even more so than what we see in corporate America today, where people trade hours for dollars. Let us not return to the working conditions that existed prior to the American Revolution, where between 33 and 66% of white immigrants in the American colonies were indentured slaves. They, too, were people for dollars. Now, that example may be a little harsh, but let me tell you something. If you look at today's workers, a lot of them really do not like what they're doing. Capitalism represents freedom, and network marketing is one of the truest forms of capitalism. In network marketing, each person can multiply their efforts, their skills, their abilities, and their talents by helping others become successful. It is not a zero-sum game. It's people helping people. Network marketing has proven itself part of the new economy. For many shoppers, the preferred way of doing business, buying from your friends to help your friends help you improve your life. Although sharing the products or services and the opportunity with people you know is still the basic foundation of the business, today we see more people using the internet, conference calling, and other long-distance sponsoring techniques to extend their network of relationships across the country and across the world. Network marketing is not, let me repeat, network marketing is not a get-rich-quick scheme. Success in network marketing is based on some very basic business principles. Network marketing is a serious business for serious people. It is a proven system where the design, creation, and expense the corporate team has gone through becomes a roadmap for your success. Just follow the simple, proven, and duplicatable system that the good companies provide. Network marketing, it's very simple. It's all about leverage. You can leverage your time and increase the number of hours that you work, that work effort, on which you can become paid by sponsoring other people and earning a small income of their efforts. John Paul Getty, who created one of the world's greatest fortunes, said, "I would rather make 1% on the efforts of 100 people than 100% on my own efforts." This is a very basic concept, and it's the cornerstone of network marketing. And anybody who's read and studied people like John Paul Getty understands they were capitalists. You know, for example, most successful people building a network marketing business do so in an organized method. They work a few dedicated hours each week, with each hour of effort serving as a building block for their long-term business growth. You notice I said long-term business growth. It is not get rich quick. You need to expect to spend 3 to 5 years before it starts growing well, growing large, just as you would in any other business. Then you sponsor other people and teach those people how to sell the company's product and sponsor others who duplicate the process. This takes time. By helping the people you personally sponsor to sponsor others, you duplicate yourself. If you're not duplicatable, then the system is bound. The entire business depends upon you. Your success, your chance of success has been limited. Because as this duplication process continues, you create compound growth that can lead to hundreds or even thousands of people coming into your business. You leverage your time by helping others be successful and earn an income from all their efforts. Network marketing is a low overhead, home-based business that can actually offer many of the tax advantages associated with owning your own landscaping business, your own contracting business. It is a business. Network marketing is a people-to-people business that can significantly expand your circle of friends. It is a business that enables you to travel as well as enjoy the lifestyle of your dreams or just simply put extra money into your budget. You can make as little as $100 extra a month, $1,000 extra a month, or you can make tens of thousands a month full-time. The greatest feature of network marketing is you and you alone determine the impact it has upon your life. You are the only one that can fire you. When you go into work each day, you are the boss. But network marketing takes knowledge, skills, and ability, as does every economic endeavor that you can imagine. But the skills here are simple. Person realizes the economic truth and faces their fears of rejection, their fears of failure, their fears of whatever, of going out alone, being, you know, dependent upon yourself. Relationship marketing is an economic powerhouse that can provide anyone with economic power and time freedom to live the life they dream. Now, it may or may not be something for you, but Robin and I are here to enlighten those that understand the 40-40-40 rule of employment has failed. Working 40 hours a week for 40 years to retire on 40% of your pay has failed millions upon millions of workers, and we're here to tell you there's a better way. Read the book, Who Moved My Cheese, and you will understand more of what is happening in our country. Politicians cannot fix your personal economy, but you can. If you understand your cheese has moved and you want to adapt to the economic trends, contact us at legacyforum@yahoo.com. If you want more, you must become more.
I know it's my time, now I'm gonna cross
That song is Breakthrough, and it's brought to you by a good friend of ours, Mike Craig, and his band, Farewell to Fear. And a breakthrough is a significant song because it's talking about breaking through, and that's it. If you're involved in any business, network marketing or an entrepreneurship, you got to break through some old paradigms. And it's about time again in our program, and I know what's coming up next.
I knew it
was coming. I could just kind of feel it coming upon me. But, you know, I believe in equality in religious freedom. I do. And I believe in logic and reason. But let me tell you something. This is just weird. A Michigan atheist request for a reason station. That's right. This person wanted a reason station inside City Hall has been rejected by Warren's mayor, Jim Fouts. And the reason he rejected a reason station inside City Hall, because it would disrupt the prayer station.
That's weird to me. I
can't explain that. I mean, how? Anyway, I won't go much into that, but let me tell you something. Robin and I really thank you all for listening this evening. You know, despite all the technical difficulties, you know, we do our best to bring you our best because we truly want each and every one of you to live the life of your dreams. When you were a child, you had childhood dreams, and somehow too many of us, they were stolen or smothered, or society told us we couldn't do this or that. And we're here to tell you that if you need to rekindle those childhood dreams, we're here to help, and that's what this program is all about. So, again, thank you for joining us this evening. If you have any questions, you want some topics out there that you want us to talk about, because you know us, we'll talk about anything at least once, email us at legacyforum@yahoo.com. Now, I'm telling you, it's legacyforum@yahoo.com. And since Robin can't say it, can you say it, Robin? Can you say it?
Just go out there and make somebody else happy.